We're glad you're joining us here at Common Thread Online. This is a recording of our community gathering, as we do each week, to think together about the spiritual journey. At the end of the lesson, we open the floor for discussion. We'd love to hear what you're thinking, too. Go to our community's Facebook page, post your thoughts. Is go toward what hurts. It could also have been go toward what we fear. Now, neither of those are particularly feel-good titles. They don't really sell well. But if you'll hang in there, I think we'll see that if we do that, we will eventually have less hurt in our lives, less fear in our lives. But first, a quick recap of the lesson so far. In the last couple weeks, we've outlined a journey, a human journey, in how we become fully realized human beings, how we fully develop in our humanity. Joseph Campbell studied myths and fables and outlined 17 features of what he called the hero's journey. We're looking at them, these 17 stages, in three stages. We leave home, we leave the values and the beliefs and the norms of the village. We discover a reality that we had not known. We discover a great gift we had not known. And we bring that gift home. Often we don't bring it home to the home we left because they will not allow us to come home because the gift has transformed and changed us. So we find a home, a place to give our gift. That was the first week I outlined that. Then last week I mapped that framework onto another journey, the spiritual journey. But not the spiritual journey as outlined in institutional religious life, but the spiritual journey as outlined by those who have been chased out of religion, who have been rejected by religion, who have been exiled and banished and sent to the wilderness. Because out there in the wilderness, they also found three stages on this journey into our deepest humanity. They found the purging way, the illuminating way, and the uniting way. We saw that last week. And we saw the two journeys do map onto one another quite nicely with one distinction. On the spiritual journey, there is a greater emphasis on being active, an active participant in initiating the process. In the hero's journey of myth and fable, often the hero is sent out without much participation. Poseidon gets angry and throws him out, or some such thing happens to the hero. But in the spiritual journey, we actually participate in initiating the beginning stages of the journey. We are active participants in launching ourselves on the journey. So that's the via purgativa, practices that pull back the blinds and invite illumination. Stage one, the purging way. Stage two, the illuminating way. Stage three, the uniting way. We invite seeing by doing these practices. We help ourselves find the reality that we had not known. We help ourselves get started on the journey that's going to help us discover our great gift. Well, that's a quick recap of the last 2 weeks. For a fuller picture, you could have a listen online, but it's that initiating part, getting started on the journey, that I want to talk about today. Listen to this. You know what? Because the sound wasn't up, let's start that again. Because you need to know Princess Leia. Now you know what's going on.
You must learn the ways of the Force if you were to come with me to Alderaan.
Alderaan? I don't need to Alderaan. I better get home. It's late. I'm in for it as it is. I can't get involved. I've got work to do. It's not that I like the Empire. I hate it, but there's nothing I can do about it right now. It's a long way.
That's your uncle talking.
How am I ever going to explain this?
Learn about the Force.
far as Anchorage. You can get a transport there to Mos Eisley or wherever you're going.
You must do what you feel is right, I suppose.
So a consistent feature of the hero's journey, whoa, not me. Again and again and again, I can't do that. This is not for me, somebody else. Not me, I'm just a farmer. Hero's journey, not me, I'm a hobbit. Gandalf is the one who should go. Aragorn's the one who should go, not me. Look, I can take you as far as Anchorhead, but really, not me, not me. I'm just a shepherd. I can't even speak properly. Choose my brother. Choose Aaron. Don't choose me. So we began this lesson kind of recognizing and emphasizing that this is not a journey for the select few. It's a journey for all of us. Well, here's the thing. It may be a journey for all of us, but nobody believes that. Nobody thinks it's true. We all think that some heroic adventure, some bigger life, stepping into the full realization of our humanity, that's for somebody. That is not for me. That's why we begin with the practices, because practices pull back the blinds and let in the light. The practices pull back that universal illusion that we are not up to it, that we are not carriers of the inner light. We are not animated by the divine. We start with the practices because the blinds are pulled, and we pull them back through the practices so we can see that the invitation is for us. It really is. So we resist the invitation. The first stage on the journey is to refuse the journey. That's the part. We don't think it's for us, but that's not the only reason we resist. We also resist because if you get even a little glimpse of what the journey is or where it's going to take you, you get just a little bit of clarity, some part of us realizes, oh man, this is going to hurt. This thing is going to be daunting. There are going to be difficulties. There are going to be challenges, enormous challenges, and fear. That's always where the journey begins. Every one of us, fear and resistance and avoidance, rejecting the invitation. So in all of these stories, the invitation always evokes an initial refusal. Nope, not me. This is something that's grandiose. Nope, not me. Something this meaningful, something this important, something this incredible, no. So Luke can't imagine leaving his daily chores. Frodo can't imagine leaving second breakfast. Moses can't imagine leaving the comforting anonymity of the desert, because of course we doubt our fitness for such a noble endeavor. Our brains pull us, oh, it's too far to go. Leaving home, thinking differently, seeing differently, leaving behind the village, maybe forever, no. So, as I've been saying, the invitation to this journey, it comes to every one of us. With the invitation comes the fear of what we're going to lose if we take it. We're going to lose life as we know it in the village. Our hearts are stirred to great adventure, they are, but we say no. Yes, we do have an unquenchable desire to become our truest selves, we do, but it also scares our socks off. So we say no. We fear pain. A growth opportunity comes along. We fear what we will lose if we take it. We hear a small whisper to go this way, explore this thing, dig under the surface of that thing. We are afraid. We step back. And what if we launch on this noble endeavor and we fail? What if we try only to show ourselves that we really aren't those kind of people? So the journey does take us where we can't imagine. It does strip away the comforts of the village. There are challenges and discomforts and losses, but it is also true that on this journey we discover resources and we discover strength and we discover insight and courage and comrades that we also couldn't imagine. But when we hear the invitation at the beginning, we don't know any of that stuff yet. We don't know all the things that we will discover. We only see the bad parts, which again is why we begin the journey with the practices. Because every time we sit silently and meditate, what we are doing is insisting of ourselves that we see our ego resisting the deeper part of ourselves. Every time we practice self-examination, we insist of ourselves that we see the darkness of our shadow sides and go toward it. Every time we engage spiritual friendships, every time we press past the fear of seeking out spiritual friends or opening up to be transparent with our spiritual friends or talk about our shadow sides alongside spiritual friends, we are insisting of ourselves that we do the very things that will make it doable when the invitation is extended next time around to take up this heroic journey. Because the practices strengthen us for the very first trial of the journey, the temptation not to go. The temptation not to go. We would not be human if we weren't afraid. We wouldn't be human if we didn't avoid troubles. We wouldn't be human if this thing didn't feel so daunting. So of course, once we realize that the journey has troubles that go with it, well, of course, every hero that ever was at first refused the call. Jesus invites us to the journey, and his invitation comes with a warning. Take up your cross. This thing's going to kill you. Because part of the journey is going to kill the part of you that you think is you. Now, it's not really you. It's not the deepest you. And there's going to be life on the other side. But you don't know that until you say yes to this journey. That's why there's a recurring refrain in all of our ancient texts. Fear not, fear not, fear not, fear not. There is resource and capacity and strength once you get on this journey. There is camaraderie that will take you through on this journey. But you got to get on the journey. So, move toward the fear. Or you could say, move toward the hurt. Move toward the thing that your most basic instinct insists you should refuse. In the summertime, when I was in graduate school, I was a wilderness guide. And one of the adventures that I would take people on was rock climbing. And while I was doing that, I must have said over the course of a summer 1,000 times, get your body away from the rock. Get your body away from the rock. Because when you take someone out on their first really hairy pitch, and they're up 180 feet, lots of exposure, the sensible part of our brain says, we should not be here. This is not where we should be. So the most natural thing to do when your brain tells you that is to hug the rock. Get as close as you can to something that is solid. But it's a faulty instinct because what that actually does is it reduces the friction between the rubber that we have on our feet and the rock. It changes the angle and it makes it more likely that we're going to slip and fall. But keep your body away from the rock, on the other hand, and it increases the refriction and the friction. So it's a good idea. Stay away from the rock. But instincts are powerful. And so we hug the rock. So 1,000 times, get your body away from the rock. Get your body away from the rock. It is human to shy away from potential pain. It is human to not go toward it, of course. So nobody would launch out on this journey if there weren't other factors in play. And that's what I want to talk about today, the other factors that are in play. Now, you have probably experienced some of these. I'm going to name a few, and I hope that, looking back, you're going to recognize that some of them have happened. I hope that tomorrow, when another one comes, you'll recognize it when it happens. So here's what happens that counters the most natural instinct to refuse the call. Obi-Wan does ask us. He invites us to come. His words do stir us more deeply than the fear, more deeply than the comforts of the village. Our fairy godmother does show up, and she brings the resources we are going to need to be able to pursue this deep dream within our souls. The burning bush does show up, an experience, and with it comes a voice of promise. Maybe that voice comes from a parent or a grandparent or a teacher that says, I see something about you, or this is possible for you. And maybe we get a sense of deep stirring from that person's belief. Or maybe we get that deep stirring from a church service. That has happened to me many times. Or maybe you've heard a story so many times as a child, but now something happens and you see that story in a new light, which changes everything. Or maybe there's a circumstance, a dramatic circumstance. You might have even used the word a miracle, and you look at it and you say, "Ah, I see differently." Something, some person, some story, some experience touches us and reminds us of who we are. Something, some story, some person makes a compelling invitation that challenges the natural instinct to go back to our chores. I bet if you think back, you've had one of those moments. You've probably had more than one. Something deeper than our fear. Something deeper than our avoidance. Because there is inside of our humanity an unquenchable desire. Now, we also have the constraints of the village. We also have our fear, and we have our pain avoidance. And yeah, they do their best to sequester that desire away and keep it contained. And so, the initial refusal is part of the journey. The nice thing is, it's only the first part. It's not the end of the journey. We refuse, we always do, but that need not be the end. So if you have refused some invitation to some point of growth, if you have gotten close to something that was inviting you to into a point of transformation and you backed away, goodness sakes, we all have, every one of us. No worries, because the invitation comes around again and again and again. Now, have I mentioned the practices? They help us. I read this. When I saw my mother cry tears of shame over what I've done, when she said to me, "I want you to be a better man," when the police did not arrest me, when I got a second chance, that's the day I accepted the call to the journey. That was the time I didn't refuse it. And another, I was sitting on the couch after work. I was just playing a video game, and I don't know why, but I saw my life, and it was not headed anywhere that I wanted it to go. And in that moment, I touched something of the deep desire inside me, and I heard this inner whisper, "Go, do, become." And looking back, I realized that was the day. That was the day I did not refuse the call. We resist the journey, we do. We resist the invitation, we do. But Obi-Wan comes back. The inner voice speaks again. Our mother's tears break our hearts. The practices build up an interior strength that allows us one day to accept that invitation and to break through. Now, I want to end with something that we talk about a lot, something that we're going to have to work on together with purpose and intention as this pandemic is winding down. And pray to God it is winding down. I keep getting worried about those variants. But as this is winding down, we're going to have to work with intention and purpose, building authentic spiritual friendships back together again, building authentic community back together again. Well, this story comes from a book. It's called The Five Invitations, What Death Can Teach Us About Living Fully. You want to write that down. It's The Five Invitations. You'll be able to find it. So a child, 5 years old, cuts his hand with a pocket knife, blood everywhere, freaking out the way kids freak out when blood is in the mix. And so mom says, "Ooh, I think we're going to need our magic towel for this one." So she pulls the boy onto her lap, and she wraps his hand in a towel, and she holds him and calms him, rocks him. And when he's quieted and when he's caught his breath, she says gently, "Well, let's take a look now, shall we?" And he does not want to look, and he does everything he can to resist looking. He does not want to see. It is far too frightening, far too painful. And eventually, and gently, she unwraps the towel, and he realizes it's going to be okay. He realizes it's actually helpful to pull back the towel. It's actually helpful to go toward his pain. It's actually helpful to go toward his fear. Being with him in his pain, his mother was able to help him face what he needed to face, go toward the hurt. So I read that story. And when I did, my mind went back to my 20s, to a memory. a therapist that I had in the 20s because I was freaking out and my life was going off the rails. I was in a severe depression. I had plans for suicide, and he held me and helped calm me down enough, get quiet enough to unwrap the towel and look at stuff I did not want to look at. It was actually stuff I didn't even know that I didn't want to look at. I remembered that. And I had a second memory. It was a group I was part of in our community when we were meeting at the old building. And we were doing that same thing for one another. We'd built enough trust with one another to be able to help each other calm down, unwrap the towel, and look at stuff that we had not been looking at, didn't want to look at, refused to look at. We made it possible for one another to get past our avoidance. Now, I didn't frame it this way then, but looking back, I realized what we were doing is we were helping one another get past the first challenge of the hero's journey, refusing the call. Now, we scheduled downtime to rest during the summer, so not many new groups or events are starting up until August. But in August, you're going to be invited to help us create spaces within our community where we can be that kind of environment for one another. An environment that helps us get past our natural resistance to becoming fully human. Our natural resistance to going on this heroic journey. And that first step, it is a big one. It is a difficult one. And we keep looping back to that first step again and again and again until finally we accept the call. So I hope when you get invited this summer into one of the spaces, if you're online, some of those spaces will be on Zoom. Some of the spaces we'll try and do in person. That's where we will create the environment in which we can help one another move forward on our own heroic journeys. So rising above the limits and constraints of village think, discovering the gift that we have to give, and finding a home in which we can give it. That's our prayer. May it be so. Amen. Well, if you would, please prepare your tithes and offerings. We all donate online now, so get out your phone. You can text it. If you go to our website, you can find the spaces to do it. And as you do, remember what I say all the time, that when we invest in spiritual community, it is an investment. We put in and we get a return on, because the return on is transformative for our hearts. We are restitching the torn fabric of community. We are creating the environment and space in which human beings thrive. And so every ounce of energy and time and love and the dollars that it takes to be healthy, all of our investments return to us. So I hope you'll contribute. The donate button is at the top of our website. You can do that there. And while you're doing that, what are you thinking about? What is stirring up in your hearts? Let's see. Bob Love said, please spend a few minutes talking about the journey late in life. So thank you, Bob, for telling me that before, so I had a chance to think about it. Bob sent me an email this week or early last week. So later in life, there's a very good chance, Bob, all of us, that we're going to be called upon to be Obi-Wan. There's a very good chance that our fulfillment will come in the invitation to, in the spotting of, in the encouraging of others. And it turns out that that is as much part of our journey into full realization of our humanity as it was when we were the one, the recipient of Obi-Wan's encouragement. And so I say that because here's the thing that happens. When we draw the circle, we've got these four categories of practice that we work. We work the communal practices, the contemplative, the learning, and the serving. Actually, I like the way Jen did it better. We make the circle this way, clockwise. The communal, the contemplative, the learning, and the serving. And the serving is to make the world a better place. The serving is to mitigate pain and the systems that cause pain in Wake County. The system is to go against injustices that we find and discover and to make the world a better place. That's part of it. But a significant part of it is we don't fully realize who we are as human beings until we are contributing. That is an essential part of what makes us healthy and whole, that we give what we have received. There's an analogy I heard when I was a kid in church about the Sea of Galilee and the Dead Sea. The Sea of Galilee, water comes in, water runs out, it's alive and thriving. The Dead Sea, the water goes in, it doesn't come out, and it's dead, and it's like the Salton Sea in California. So it's a great metaphor for saying we receive in and we give out, and it is that cycling process that actually causes us to thrive and realize our full humanity. That's the first thing. The second thing, Bob, is about Bob's question, is we are always cycling back to the first step of the journey. We are always cycling back to the via purgativa. We are always cycling back to the pulling back of the blinds and letting light in. To the degree that we are able to see, to the degree that we are able to pull back the blinds is the degree that we are able to have the illumination. That's the second one, the via illuminata. We are able to be enlightened. Photosis is one of the other words that is used, that we have the light by which we see. And so there is always another blind spot. There is always another thing to pull back. There is always another thing that we didn't see. I told you earlier, it was kind of stupid simple that I didn't see my own need for working with people. But there's always a way that our natural instincts betray us again and again and again and again. I can look afterwards and say, God, I should have seen that one a while ago. But there's always another way to pull back. So those two things, it is as essential to give on the journey as it is to receive. And there's always another point of darkness to pull back and bring light in. Let's see. Well, before I look at Angie's, anything you're thinking? Yeah, so we're going to have to get back into the habit of doing what are you thinking, because you've clearly lost the skill. All right, we'll go to Angie's. It seems like the ability to do this is highly dependent on having a social support network, a system to help you verbally process the pain. Listen, the church. But a lot of people have forgotten this is the primary function of faith communities. Nota bene. Hear now the word of the Lord. Yes and amen. Yeah. So we've got ideas about what church is, and we don't realize that what church is the fellowship of the ring. But we're going to get a little further down the road, and you're going to realize our ability to walk this heroic journey is going to depend upon the people that we surround ourselves with, the finding of people. And by the way, an unlikely band of people they will be. We will not recognize when we meet them that they are the band that is going to help us go toward our destiny. So we understand in these stories this great richness of human wisdom that we are for one another. So I'm like you. I thought, my God, what am I doing in church? You know, why in the world am I going to church? This is a toxic institution. These things are sick and unhealthy. And I was ready to go, and I was only 22. And I had this idea that if I become a therapist, here's what I do, and it's a sliver. It's an important sliver, but it's a sliver of what happens in healthy religion. If I lead a yoga studio, or if I get involved in social network, or if I do any one of these things, the only show in town that does this comprehensively, there's a guy who writes, if you didn't think I was a heretic yet, Sam Harris writes this book on being spiritual without believing in God. And here's the heretical part. It's a great book. You should read it. And the thing is, there's lots of things that you can do through books and through podcasts and through learning, and you can find aspects of the communal practices. You can find aspects of the contemplative practices. You can go to your yoga studio. You can go to an ashram. You can do a lot of things. You can find the learning. You can find the serving. But what religion does, what the church does, what Angie's talking about, is this comprehensive, holistic human experience where all of this stuff happens among a group of people who are collectively moving forward on the journey together. And so, yes and amen, Angie. Okay, you ready yet? All right. Now remind me your name.
Suzanne.
Suzanne? All right, Suzanne, you got to speak into the microphone or the folks can't hear you. Patrick, would you actually run the microphone around for me? Because I forgot the camera's stuck up there.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
I think what you caused me to think of about the church right now is that the church in my life has been a place where ultimate questions were answered, not asked.
Yeah.
Whether I had them or not.
Right.
And so the invitation to think for myself was not there. It was to accept an answer.
Yeah.
This theme of the hero's journey and the community that's needed sounds like the power is in the ability to ask and invite and keep asking and not assume an answer for another person,
yeah.
Which is very enlivening to me.
Hallelujah. So one of the stops that I had on the on my church journey, I was in the evangelical church, I was in the liturgical church, I was in the charismatic church. I spent some time in the Catholic, it was a group, it wasn't the church, and the Protestant. So, you know, I've been around, I've seen the church. And one of the stops was in the Pentecostal church. And here's what the Pentecostal church says. It says, you have the indwelling divine within you. You have the Spirit of God within you. And I thought, that seems like something I should pay attention to. Now, there's a bunch of craziness that goes on and a whole bunch of people who say, oh, those people you got to watch out for. But I was with those people, and you do not have to watch out for those people. They're wonderful people. They're good people, and they really tapped into something great. Here's the problem. They were saying out of this side of their mouth, you have the divine inside of you. Out of this side of the mouth, they were saying, you better do what we say, because if you don't, you're going to go astray. Here's what they did not say. They did not say, you have the divine in you, so you better discern your own interior voice. You better listen to that voice from within. They said, here are the theological answers. Here are the behavior answers. Here are the conforming to the norm answers. We've got them. We give them to you. And that's not just the Pentecostal church. That's church. But if this great insight that we've been given at this moment in history, that we are carriers of the interior divine, is to be taken seriously, then you can't get answers from the preacher guy. Well, with the exception of this preacher. I'm kidding. You can't get answers from the preacher guy. You have to get the answers from within. That's why we do these practices. Because the best chance you've got of discerning the interior voice happens when you meditate, happens when you're in spiritual community and have spiritual friendships, happens when you are learning and jumping out of your thought ruts and getting new thoughts exposed to, happens when you're giving yourself away in service to something that's bigger than yourself. It happens when you work the circle. That's when you tap into that divine light that is in you. Okay, let's see. Last one. How are we doing? We'll just read Christie's quick. Thinking about Dorothy's hero's journey in The Wizard of Oz, and she needed wisdom from brain, scarecrow, gut, lion, and heart, tin man. I realize she was enough all along. Look at that. You're so brilliant. She's actually in my notes. We'll talk about Dorothy a little bit later. All right, so those of you who are at home, join us and put your hand on your heart. Let's do that together. And let's remember as we go that we are all carriers of the indwelling divine. Every one of us has within us the inner voice, the light, the inner light, love and joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, all we need. And if you would extend your other hand to our city, let's look for opportunities to share what is in us with the people that we live and work and go to school with, looking for opportunities to repair and heal our worlds. Amen. Well, God bless you. You're dismissed. You guys can go online. Those of us that are in here, we're going to greet one another. Get out of your chair. Find at least three people. Say good morning. And what's the weirdest thing you've ever eaten? All right. See y'all next. Extra coffee, and there's hermetically sealed non-COVID infected snacks. So get a snack, sit down, and chat with somebody. If these recordings help you move forward on your spiritual journey, we hope you'll take an ownership stake in the community and support the health and well-being of the community. You can go to our website, commonthreadchurch.org. The donate button is at the top of the page for your computer's browser, at the bottom of the page for your phones.